episode 278.
The realm that we're approaching now, you're going to have those critical thinkers. It's not always going to be the strongest, fastest technician or the one that is the most car inclinated in shop class in high school, you know, and so forth. It's going to be the people with the computer skills and the thinking skills. They're going to lead the way.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, aftermarketers, throughout North America and around the world to episode 278 and a special event audio recording. This episode will take you to Las Vegas at APEX 2017 and the Service EDU Summit that discusses emerging technology. How will the aftermarket prepare? Glad to have you engaging in this essential listening from the aftermarket's Remarkable Results Radio podcast. Carm Capriato here, thanking Federal Mogul Motor Parts for their support of the aftermarket's premier podcast. When you need innovation and quality, you need Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Brands like Moog, Felpro, Wagner Brake, Anco, Champion, Seal Power, FP Diesel, and more. They're the parts techs trust. Find out more at fmmotorparts.com, and thank you for the support of these brands. Hey, one of the best perks of heading out on the road is to meet many fans of the podcast. And at APEX 2017, it was no exception. It was great to meet so many aftermarket professionals, and I want to thank you for stopping me and saying hi. It's great to hear from aftermarket pros who find extreme value in the podcast, and I'm happy to hear that we continue to bring you value in each episode as an educational conduit. If you did not make it to APEX this year, you're going to benefit from this great audio recording. You're going to be in the room, if you will, and get your uptake on this wide-ranging discussion. So when Mark Bogdansky from AutoCare called to ask me to put together this summit, the podcast alumni rallied together and picked the title. We thought the best perspective would be to include a shop owner, a diagnostician, and an industry trainer. Well, we decided that the title should be Emerging Technology, How Will the Aftermarket Prepare? With shop owner Ryan Clough from Dubworks in Cincinnati, Matt Fonslow, diagnostician and shop manager at Riverside Automotive in Red Wing, Minnesota, and Dave Hobbs, lead technical trainer and course developer for Delphi Products and Service Solutions. So you're getting the full Monty and value from this Service EDU Summit via this recording. I'm confident that the educational value of Remarkable Results Radio for you will be priceless. I can only hope that you find the inspiration to implement many of the great ideas and insights you receive as you set your course for your own remarkable results. Hey, keep in mind that the podcast has a buzzing social network on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, and a huge aftermarket insider newsletter following. Welcome new Facebook friends to the podcast, Gregory Setzer, Mike Robinson, and Ryan Blair, and new LinkedIn connections, Robert Van Nordstrand, Ken Seal, and Lance Engel. Thanks very much for your connections to the podcast, and I have a convenient page with every social link right there for you, remarkableresults.biz/social. Now, if you want the key topic talking points, find the show notes at remarkableresults.biz/E278. Now enjoy the Service EDU Summit at APEX 2017, Emerging Technology, How Will the Aftermarket Prepare? With Ryan Clough, Dave Hobbs, and Matt Fonslow, and moderated by yours truly. Okay, thank you. So here's how it works. I sit down and ask the questions, and they do all the work from now on. Hello, Dave. Nice to see you, man. So this first question goes to Ryan. Listen hard. Listen hard. Ryan, what's going to change with the work we do in the next 10 years?
Well, I think this is definitely a hot topic here. I'm sure everyone, I'm not going to be telling you a whole lot new. I think there's going to be more programming, more diagnostic and complex diagnostic, and more calibration, specifically the advanced driver assist systems. And what that means is going to be more investment for your shops in terms of training, tooling, diagnostic equipment, which also means there may need to be different structures for income and profit. I also think that with the complex diagnostic, as you know, most of the times diagnostic doesn't include parts. So you know, if half of our income is parts and we're just doing diagnostic, and I've already seen this in some shops, some specialty shops, Euro shops, their parts to labor ratio is altering just a little bit. And this could be a trend that continues. It's hard to say for sure in 5 or 10 years, but I think what this means is going to be higher diagnostic rates. And many of you out there are already doing this, and kudos to you for that. I also think, you know, it's no secret we have a shortage of technicians, and specifically diagnostic technicians such as Matt. I interviewed a technician about a week ago. I think he had been a technician for about 15 years, and he said, you know, when I started, I was told this was the way to go. You know, this is how I was going to make good money. And these days, I'm in a dealership where, you know, there's a couple of guys in there that they just say, I can't do this kind of work, and they get the gravy and they're actually making more money. So where's the incentive for me as a great diagnostic technician, you know, to to do this anymore? So it made total sense. I think in addition to charging higher diagnostic rates, you know, these rare birds of diagnostic technicians, they need to get paid more and a lot more.
He's my new favorite panel member.
Matt loves to rant about that all the time.
Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, we did a whole podcast on that, on raising labor rates, which of course then helps affect what our people are going to be paid, the profit of the shop, the success of the industry.
Yeah. Well, I could interject that not just raising the rates, but how about actually charging diagnostic time would be, you know, a massive improvement for many shops out there, you know, valuing the time to figure out what is wrong with the vehicle, what does it really need, and valuing the cost to the business to purchase the tools and equipment required, and, of course, the tech, can't forget the tech, and then the training involved to use it effectively.
Can't wait for you to chime in a minute. Great stuff. Thank you, Matt.
I also think that, you know, the way the work's going to change the next 5 to 10 years, ride share and car sharing is going to become bigger. As our population continues to increase, not everybody wants to own a car. A lot of studies are talking about millennials and future generations that have little interest in owning the car. And if you look at the duty cycle of the average car, I can't remember what it's low, 5% something. The car just sits there most of the time. So I think, you know, as we get into, you know, the future, we're going to find cars that have a lot more miles on them, which means more maintenance. And I think this is a positive for a lot of shops out there. To have shops or to have fleet work, you know, essentially, you know, cars that are having a lot of miles on them. Tires. If you don't do tires, get into tires. For the same reason, you know, that the diagnostic issue comes into play. It's really a profit per hour situation. If you're looking at tires and just in terms of margin, I encourage you to look at your profit per hour. That's why diagnostic can be a challenge. There's no part attached to it. But if you're not doing tires, obviously that's going to be something we need to do. And lastly, with electric vehicles, I think everyone is thinking about that. And, you know, if you've been to any kind of management class or 20 group, they talk a lot about average repair order. We don't get paid for racking the car, test driving the car, inspecting the car. We need to get as much work out of the car as possible. So, you know, if we have electric vehicles in the future, I think there's a chance that, you know, it could be a higher car count situation. It's hard to predict exactly, but all the more reason to have what I call the basics in line. Have your shop running as best as it possibly can so you can be prepared for, you know, what's coming down the pipeline.
Great insights, Ryan. Thank you. Dave Hobbs. Is AC just an abbreviation for air conditioning?
Well, I'll give you the answer there. No, alternating current is something that's not really even being taught very much, if at all, in the post-secondary, you know, vocational realms. It's all over. If we start talking about some of the things that Ryan mentioned, and a lot of you have been to these classes here at APEX for ADAS, autonomous vehicles, the vehicle-to-vehicle communications, vehicle-to-infrastructure, the V2X, vehicle-to-everything, your car is totally connected. That's all radio frequency. And along with that, you have the spectrum, the entire spectrum of EMI. These are things that traditionally have been for electrical engineers to know about, and all the car guys and gals had to know about was just basic circuits and DC fundamentals. Now it's so much different going down the road. And Delphi, you can either thank us or send us nasty letters for making the future as different as it's going to be, because the cars are going to become more complicated, as Ryan said, a lot more rideshare. But I'll add to that, there'll be more miles per car. And the reason is there's going to be a lot more people when you get to a level 4 or 5 autonomous vehicle, which can truly drive itself without anybody behind the wheel. So it'd be like the Uber drivers, that don't, aren't there in the, behind the seat anymore. Currently they're kind of babysitting the car and recording data as the car drives itself, the experimental Uber cars in different places in the country. But going down the road, unless something major happens with legalities and, you know, legislation, we'll probably see that. That means a lot of folks that are older or disabled or even young people that aren't even old enough for to drive a car now can get out and go places in these cars. So I think the picture maybe for your shops will be more fleet service. There'll be fleets of cars that are ran for the rideshare programs, and you'll be servicing them, and they'll have a lot more miles on their odometers.
Matt, will shops need perhaps a dedicated technician, specialty tools, calibration equipment to properly compete and repair our future cars?
You could argue they need that already. Depending on the size of the shop, they might really need one already. If you're not specializing in a single, or I shouldn't say a single, a limited number of car lines, you probably should have a tech dedicated to certain areas of the vehicle, focusing on undercar, focusing on diagnostics, of course, because there's a certain level of knowledge required, experience required, and just dealing with PCs and different interfaces, different websites, the scan tools themselves, navigation is different from Toyota to Ford to Mercedes-Benz. That's just the reality of it. And asking that one tech to be bumper to bumper on a vast array of car lines is, it's ludicrous, honestly. You cannot be efficient consistently, no way. You can't be consistent in your speed of diagnostics, speed in the brake jobs, speed on maintenance services when you have to do everything bumper to bumper.
Thank you, Matt. And I hope you all appreciate that we're coming at emerging technologies from three different perspectives. So the next question goes to Ryan Clough. What is the role of the owner as business models transform and becoming the CEO of your business is the buzz in management circles?
I think that 10 or 20 years ago, there were a lot of owners who were technicians. A lot of shops were founded by technicians. There's still many that are service advisors and functioning as a manager, but that's going to get harder and harder. They really need to get out of the business and delegate the day-to-day, the management tasks, the KPIs, whatever, to a manager and have time. It's going to take time and money to stay engaged in what's coming down the pipeline in the future. He disappeared. Tech guru and futurist Donnie Cipher, who was over there, he said it best. I like what he said. He said, you need to be an industry analyst. As a shop owner, I mean, you need to be here. You need to be at every conference, reading magazines, engaged in every way you can be. As a true CEO, I think it's easy to understand a CEO of a large company. It's a big moving, you know, organization. And, you know, maybe 50 years an automotive shop wasn't like that. But the pace of technology is going to make this a rapidly changing business. And you need two things to do that. You need time and you need money. And if you're a shop owner and you're in the day to day and or you haven't mastered, again, what I call the basics, you know, getting your shop profitable, getting it at some point automated so that you have some time to spend, you know, on these tasks that are coming up, you know, it's going to be a tough way to go in the next 5-10 years.
Well, a frustration, if we're talking about technicians becoming shop owners, is as techs, they may have attended training for car repair or diagnostics, and then going back to the shop may not necessarily be applying what they learned. Now, as shop owners, they need to attend training on running their shop and then go back to the shop and apply what you learned.
Same concept.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, here's an example. Christian Brothers Automotive recruits franchise owners who are good business people. And if they have ran a repair shop, maybe. But they really just want the good business people. Then they select a good service manager who is an expert in the vehicles.
So let me ask the panel this. There's so much talk out there about the need for really good business management training, and is that going to really separate the chaff?
Absolutely.
A simple enough answer, but why do we have so many struggles out there? Is it that we're just not feeling that we need to go and get management training? That we're not, like you said, Matt, applying it?
I think there's a lot of ego involved, but there's also a shrinking pie. There's less work for the number of shops. So we're start competing on the easiest level to compete on is price. And once price starts dictating everything. It's a race to the bottom. And that's really, it seems like we have a big split between trying to do it the cheapest and trying to do it the best.
So the big problems are, if we're not getting technical training and we're not getting business management training, how long will a person who doesn't implement going to last? And we've said this for years right. and years and years. Oh my God, here comes some new technology. It's going to separate it. But is it even more important than ever today because it's so tough to do business, to be in business?
I would argue it is. And I would also say even currently, there's almost a fate worse than failing. And that's just constantly struggling. And I see years being taken off of some people's lives the way they're doing it. And it's a classic dilemma. I call it the tradesperson dilemma. It's not unique to our industry. I have, you know, a friend who bakes bread or, you know, a woman that cuts hair. They know the trade and they love the trade, and people love that they love the trade and that they're good at it. And there just comes a time where they have too much demand. And then are they going to make that transition? Is ego going to get in the way, or are they going to have an aha moment? Are they going to read an article? Are they going to come to one of these events? Are they going to meet somebody? I don't have time to tell you my whole story, but I had an aha moment where it just clicked and I knew I had to make a change, and it made all the difference, and it will make all the difference for the shops to succeed in the coming decade.
So I have to tell you a really quick story. So much of what I continue to hear is about the e-myth that Michael Gerber wrote back in the 80s, and there's a lot of people shaking their heads. And anyone that I come up to and said, yeah, I'm struggling, and you know, I got to be a better businessman, and all I tell them is to go to my website, type in the word e-myth in the search bar, and see over 20 different episodes where the shop owner tells the story of how he went from working in his business to on his business, and those were transforming moments for them. And when you hear that, when you hear the voice of the person telling you that story, sometimes it has impact and it can actually change a person's world and life. Hey, thanks for that buzz, guys.
I'm talking to Bud Houston, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Hey, Bud, what's the best thing about the Guru on the Go van?
Yeah, I think that the best thing about the van and the kind of the mission is it's twofold. One is ultimately to bring brand awareness of the Federal Mogul portfolio. But I think the way that we do that is we bring value to the technician, the shop owner. And how we do that is we bring technical content, we bring some updated material, and once they see that I care about their operation, their reputation, and their qualifications, one, they're built up, but two, they really, at that point, listen to what I have to say about the brands, and it's built, the relationship is built on a mutual benefit.
So you bring technical stuff, and you bring product-specific.
Yeah, me personally, I'm super technical background. So anytime I'm doing a lunch and learn or a van visit, training session, it's typically 90% technical, 10% product.
Any new Moog products that are getting good reviews?
Yeah, one that's recently released is the Dodge Ram 25 and 3500 complete steering assembly. It's inner and outer tie rod ends and drag link pre-assembled. This is the first aftermarket part that's available in a complete assembly for this application. And the specific applications, late model Dodge Rams, are actually a kind of a high failure part on the chassis parts.
What about the compression-loaded ball joints with pre-installed integral dust boot?
Yeah, the integral dust boot has been a huge hit. Initially, the idea was well, where is the boot? And then once you kind of get around and show people, they're like, well, that is the best idea I've ever seen, because I've torn so many boots on installation, or I've had a boot that's not seated properly. And they're like, well, that's just not an issue now. And they love it.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com.
Dave Hobbs, success in diagnostics often moves beyond the trouble code flowcharts by knowing how something works and why it failed. Why is it important?
Well, now more than ever, as we've mentioned, the complexity. And the increasing complexity, folks, those of you over 50, you've seen this how many times where the independent repair shops have been told, well, the death knell for you folks, dealers only on electronic ignition. That was my dad's days. And then it was computer command control with computers on cars in 81. And then it was OBD2. Then it was hybrids. Now it's going to be automated driver assist systems. We hear it over and over, but we always do what? We always rise to the challenge. Now, part of that challenge is getting more challenging is there are less engineers that can do service development for new products, which means the flowcharts become cookie cutter and maybe less than we would like, if you can imagine that, if you know flowcharts for diagnostics today. That means critical thinking skills and things like theory of operation and theory of electricity, stuff that's boring to a lot of technicians now, but for the bright ones that are going to shine and really bring these repair shops into the realm that we're approaching now, you're going to have those critical thinkers. It's not always going to be the strongest, fastest technician or the one that is the most car inclinated in the shop class in high school, you know, and so forth. It's going to be the people with the computer skills and the thinking skills. They're going to lead the way.
Matt, other industries are after our people, looking for their skill sets and often offering more in terms of salary and benefits. What can we do to slow that trend?
Well, obviously improve the compensation packages, right?
He always talks about that all the time.
But it's true. We have a lot of industries that require not all our skill sets, a fraction of our skill sets. And they have either the means or the inclination to make it worth that tech's while to make the leap. And most of them don't like that they're not working on cars anymore. They love working on vehicles, but now they can afford to do it in their free time. And it's kind of sad. I think it just comes down to value. We got to start valuing ourselves. We have to start valuing our time and our services. We have to start demanding more of ourselves in the bays, and we have to spend more time educating the client about the hows and the whys and the why fors for why this costs this much, why we have to do this, why we're recommending that, and really start creating an environment that now is going to not only retain the veterans, we got to keep these guys, because if they leap, there's nobody to take their place. Keep the veterans and draw in young people, because right now the attrition rate is, it's horrible, right? It's like 50%, right? 50% attrition, they start out in the first year, half are out.
I have to agree with the compensation part, definitely. But beyond compensation, there are so many people. I think the number is like 50 or 60% of those employed in the trade are dissatisfied with their job. And it's not all money. If you look at the heart of the millennials and even the generations X and Ys, as my friend Bill Haas has taught that class on that topic, I've discovered this in the field, being an instructor for technicians all over the country. They're beaten down, and they don't always respond to money. Money's got to be number one, but right after number one, money has got to be the motivation. It's got to be the encouragement, finding what their love language is, what the technician wants to be given as far as compensation, days off, or appreciation, I mean, even verbal appreciation. You would think, well, they don't need that. We give them a good salary. Nope, today's generation needs that pat on the back really bad. And folks, their butts are dragging, excuse the language. And I see it in their classes every night from, you know, 5 o'clock until 9:30. And that's, God bless them, that's the ones that come to class. The ones that I really need to reach and encourage and motivate and educate are the ones that don't come to class.
And people want to be a part of something successful, right? So if you're running a successful business and everybody's benefiting, that in itself is a motivator. I'm part of something that's working and working well and growing. And I can see this, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, this positive things happening in the future. And then we're also combating other industries offering team building, you know, something you would never hear about in auto repair. Yeah. Where last week, I'm almost sure, last week I listened to the roundtable Friday. And one of the shop owners in Texas shuts the shop down opening day of baseball and takes everybody to the baseball game because they'd call in sick anyways.
It's a great story, by the way. It was last Friday. We were doing our academy, and we were talking about recruiting to fill our ranks in our bench. And one of the guys was from Houston, and he's already predicting that if they won the World Series, this is really cool, right? That he was going to shut the shop down, all four locations, for a week. And his business coach was on with him. And he said, and he was a general manager of this place, and he said, do you think Craig would go for that? Because another guy was on from Dallas, says that we will go to opening day, and you know, we may shut the shop down or do some things. And they were talking about snowboarding, and, you know, they call it the powder run, and they'll shut the shop down for doing some of that stuff out in the Denver area. And we hear so many ideas like this that bring and improve culture in the business. So the CEO has got to build that strong culture. And you said a word that I talk about a lot. It's called love. You said the love thing. I think you did. And when shop owners and even team members of a shop hear the word love, they don't know what to do with it. And I said, there's a real good way to learn how love works in the business. Think of it being a verb. Think about that for a minute and you'll understand. Okay, guys, thank you so much. Great stuff. Anything else?
Yeah, I think Mr. Buckley up front here said that the other Buckley.
Oh, Greg.
It was Greg said you have to be aware of your employees' skill sets and their passions and see if you can integrate that into your business to grow it more.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the Pico booth, I've got this young guy in there and he is very passionate about taking his diagnostic skill set to the next level, and a shop owner's standing there and I'm, you know, trying to talk to the shop owner more than the kid about, do you realize what you have here?
Yeah.
You know, spending this money isn't just to buy this a piece of equipment, it is now to enable this kid to take it to the next level and take your business with them.
I just did an interview. A shop owner says that everyone in the shop has goal posters and they're visual goal posters and it is in their bay. And so I know when I go there, if there's a picture of a new motorcycle or the new home, and that's the goal that he has, both family and in business, he works hard to help the tech, the shop owner, the service advisor to reach those goals. And those are really well-run companies, and that's where we're headed. Now, I do know that most of the people here run well-run companies. But the beauty of it is we're recording this in video, we're recording this in audio, and hopefully, and I know that we're going to put this out into the podcast network. So thanks so much for all your contributions. Ryan, how will the independent aftermarket shop leverage emerging technology to add more value and compete against dealers and big box stores?
Well, when we talk about the emerging technology, it seems to focus on the cars, as it should. And we use the analogy in our shop of a restaurant. You have the front of the house, back of the house, you know. And I think there's so many opportunities for front of the house. These are solutions that I would call enterprise solutions that 10 years ago would have only been available to large companies. So that's a really exciting part of the whole thing for me. And, you know, I think as we look at our customers, you know, millennials and future generations, they are going to demand digital communication. So things like texting from your landline, solutions like that, social media, if you're not into communicating on Facebook, sorry, you're going to have to get with it. Email, CRM, customer relationship management. Do you have a system, you know, that communicates with your customer by email? You know, one of the adages is make it easy. Make it easy for your customers and your clients to engage you. And as far as adding value goes, you know, there's no shortage of solutions out there. The digital inspections are picking up, you know, a lot of steam. Pictures. I go to the dentist. I get a new roof. Everybody's giving me pictures. And you know what? It makes a difference for me. I see a picture and I'm like, wow, that really.
Wait a minute. The dentist sends you your x-rays?
Yeah, I can see pictures of my teeth, all that kind of stuff.
And that's cool.
They're big into CRM, the dentists. Telematics, I won't go on and on because there's a million classes and discussions about telematics. One of my favorites is Uber. They've been changing their business platform over the past year. Every shop should have Uber. It's such a lean solution for small businesses. When someone's car breaks, they have two problems. They have to get their car fixed and they have to get around. And, you know, 5 years ago, you know, we'd have our service manager giving somebody a ride. We need those people doing, you know, what they need to be doing best, fixing the car or taking care of the clients. They should not be, you know, giving rides or, you know, you have to pay, you know, a full-time porter or you have more loaner cars than maybe you'd like. So that's just a great example of technology, leveraging that to get our customers where they need to go.
And I appreciate this discussion because as we were talking emerging technologies, I think from an owner's perspective, you bring some great insights. So thank you for that, Ryan. Dave Hobbs, burnout. Burnout from owners and technicians is a fact of life. Any ideas on how to prevent it?
Getting the love word coming up again. Getting back to your first love. And in the talk about these autonomous cars and how the millennials are, and you mentioned, Ryan, that they don't have that love affair with cars anymore. This is going to be a little difficult. We're going to have to raise technicians that still have that passion. And whether that passion is drag racing or building a street rod or just going to car shows, we need to do that. I mean, the ball game thing, I like that idea. But even more so, make sure you do car stuff. Whatever got the technician, whether they be 14 or 24 or they're 74 and they're still wrenching or they're running the shop, they need to get back in touch with that regularly, because there's just so much crap that goes on with the business side of it and with the technical frustrations that burnout is inevitable. But we have to get rejuvenated. It's like a vacation, only a car thing.
One of your talking points that you didn't cover is you said, others say, I've told my kid I'd break his arm if he ever picked up a wrench. That was one of his talking points. Wow, yeah. How true.
Yeah, well, you know, my dad, we had to take the wrenches, actually almost peel them from his cold, dead hands practically, because he worked up until almost his 80s. But that seems to be a rare thing these days. You know, I'm 58, and I'm still very passionate about what I do, and I really want to kind of keep working into my 70s, hopefully, God willing. But there's so many others. It's like, what happened to you? You used to love this. And so we just got to figure out what went wrong and go back and try and fix things, because we don't want our parents who are in the trade dissuading their kids, because how's that look for parents who don't, there aren't in the trade, and their kid maybe wants to get in the automotive trade, and they're saying, I don't think so. That's not really a good thing for you. Won't you be something that requires a business degree?
But there's some good family businesses out there that where the parent, the dad, the mom encourage them to come in. Why? You don't have to turn wrenches to run a big successful business today anymore. It's good that you have that trade, but there's marketing and there's sales. There's so many other things, and families can help you grow and get bigger.
That's right. And something that came up at the Automotive Training Manager Council back in April in Denver was a really good point about the millennials know where they want to get to, but they don't know the path to get there. They think there's only one path, and maybe that's just wrenching. But as you mentioned, Carm, there are so many other things you can do. Work for an OEM, work in the parts business, work in training. There are so many, work in motorsports. There are so many avenues to take that automotive aptitude and passion and apply it out there. You don't necessarily have to say, well, I got to work 20 years busting my tail, wrenching. I can do these other things and get to my goal in my career.
Thank you. Great points. Matt.
We're losing enough the way it is. We can't have them do that.
Ah, I know.
And then, you know, you're 58 isn't the same as, you know, 30, 40 years in the bay trying to turn 8 hours, 10 hours a day. You know, your body's breaking down, and because you can't turn it anymore, your wages are going down. What other industry actually punishes its veterans as they get older? That's silly.
That was the on-purpose pause, because we needed to hear that.
Applause or what I had to say?
I think both. Both. The next question happens to be for Matt. This is going to just land right in his lap. Matt, will emerging technology thin the number of shops, or will there be ways to keep just competent enough to squeak by?
I would like it to thin down the shops. I do not believe it will. I think, as Dave alluded to earlier, we thought all this technology from years ago would weed out the shops, but either we're rising to the occasion or we have a lot of different resources available to keep everybody afloat. And then the way Ryan kind of mentioned, maybe just worse than failing, just barely staying afloat. There's a lot of resources out there that keep us going, low cost, cheaper than, you know, paying a tech, sending them to training, etc.
So what do we do about the aging tech and the breaking back, and it's just not working right? There's been so much talk, and we're not here to talk about this right now, because we could go on for a whole entire seminar and get some of the great leaders in the training aspect of our business, ATMC, and I can see just Chris and Dave getting up here when we talk about the fact that today, in the last couple of days in the recording studio, we were talking about where are we going to find our future educators. I mean, it's just as bad of a problem as that we have with technicians, is to find our future educators, and there's a whole incredible storyline about that too, that people would want to go out and teach. Are they going to stay current? Do they have to get a teaching certificate? And there's a lot of interesting challenges, but I think we're all up for it. And I think the dialogue is one of the biggest things that we're working on here. Thank you, Matt. Ryan, where is our training going to come from? Will training methods change? Will we be going to OEM training?
Well, I think when we were coming up with the questions, I asked this question more because I wanted the answer to it. Honestly, I wish I had some better answers for you. I really like Dave's outlook about, you know, when we had challenges in the past, we're like, this is going to be the one that sinks us, or OBD2. And I think, you know, we will find answers to this. I think currently we have some band-aids. We have, YouTube. Raise your hand if your techs have used YouTube to, you know, fix a car or Identifix or IATN. I think simply it's going to be a leave no stone unturned kind of approach. You know, trade shows, parts companies that you don't use. I think there will be some of the, what I call just-in-time training, some of those companies that are offering, you know, remote flashing, things like that. A couple urban areas now seem to have like a full-time diagnostician, someone that has all of the factory tools you can call. We don't have one in our city, but I know some other ones that have it. And it's not really training, but maybe through osmosis you pick up a few things. And we found that there are some OEM, so at least at one of our shops, Volkswagen Audi, you cannot do factory training. They will not, absolutely, you just can't get in. But their repair data service that you get, you can order a day's worth or a month's subscription to it. They have a helpline. So, you know, there are some alternative solutions out there. And I'm really excited to see kind of what comes down the pipeline, you know, over the next 5-10 years, because someone needs to say, hey, this is a problem and I got the answer for it.
Well, I think some of the diagnostic equipment manufacturers are showing their hands about some of this is going to be answered with hold your hand diagnostics. We're seeing it from the big companies, some upstart, some used to be a big company, then they weren't so big, then they got bought out and all this. Now they have a new piece of equipment out that is going to literally hold your hand through a diagnostic process, probably programming, initializing and all that as well.
I'm skeptical. I'm sorry. I've been down that road with the GM CAMS machine, where they said that this will replace all your mechanics back in those days, and your janitor can literally plug this thing into the ALDL, that's dated me, and it tells you what to fix. And consumers still have that mentality. Well, you plug that little thing in, and it'll tell you what's wrong with the car. So here, just put this on. I already had the parts store tell me what it was. So, I mean, you've had to battle with the code readers, right?
Right.
So I think what we really are dealing with is, you mentioned there's a lot of, and Ryan mentioned it too, a lot of off the cuff ways of getting information from the OE, motorcraftservice.com, as well as, Toyota, new car features. Motorcraftservice.com is called Theory of Operation for OBD2. Looks like a boring document every model year, 200-300 pages. You want to get inside the factory drivability engineer's head? That's the free document out there for every car on the road that Ford makes. And for Toyota, look for the first year they'd redesign that model and go to new car features. That's all part of a $20 subscription on Toyota. And for Ford, it's free. So those are the things that most people in my classes, they're professionals that are motivated to come to class at night, they don't even know, and they're taking the notes down. So hopefully you'll pass that along as well. A lot of unturned stones with a lot of jewels of information.
So here's my takeaway from this. Wisdom. There's an awful lot of it up here. Thank you for that, guys. Ryan, will specialization be a big wave of the next decade? And, you know, when I interview service professionals, I ask that question a lot. And I get varied answers. What's yours?
There is definitely some difference of opinion here. I'm part of a multi-shop group, and you know, a lot of people out there are part of the general repair shop model. I think, you know, for me, when I look at the future, especially with the ADAS systems, and I think Matt touched on it, it just seems really difficult to be an expert in all makes and models. You know, I think people are doing a really good job with it now. If you have a general shop. I don't know. I think there's going to be some scenarios where you're telling a customer, hey, we can't do that. Or maybe you're shuttling the car to and from the dealership, which is an extra burden to you. So personally, I think there's some more efficiency in specialization. Obviously, I run two specialty shops. So,
if you put up your third, would you go all makes, all models?
Actually, Well, I have one quasi-Euro shop, one Japanese shop. I'm waiting. Who's going to be the first to specialize in domestic? I want to go to a shop that's only Ford, GM, and Chrysler. I don't think it exists yet, but
is
I'm really
Ford
curious.
In there? Ford's in there, right?
Yeah, the three. Okay. Whatever. Right. So, yeah, I think at this point, and if you have a general shop and you're thinking about, you know, how could I even make that transition? What about my customers? If it goes that way the next 5 or 10 years, you can change your marketing. You can just target specific models. You would grandfather in your customers. We're never going to turn anyone away and say, hey, we're not going to fix your car anymore. But if you have a new customer and they call and they say, hey, we got a Range Rover, and you're like, we're getting away from Range Rover.
I hear guys that have specialty shops and they want to open up an all makes all models. Yeah. It's interesting. They're doing so well at one. They want to get more of their customer's business because not everybody has one platform in their garage if they have 2.3 cars or whatever that is.
It's kind of that Walmart mentality, go one place to get everything. Pretty soon we'll go to Walmart and buy lumber.
If a solution presents itself in the next, 5 to 10 years for that OEM level equipment to do all of the calibrations and all of the diagnostics, that could be a game changer, and I would welcome that. So,
well, I'm happy to say I have only one more question in our prepared program, which means we can get out there and get some questions. I'm going to do a little Phil Donahue out in the audience, if anyone could appreciate or knows who that was. Okay? All right. And there's a bunch of people shaking their heads, so you must be as old as me. All right, Dave Hobbs, here's the last questions for the group, and then we'll open up the questions. This is a great, great question. How do we seed our industry with the special talent we will need to further the aftermarket and service the needs of our customers well into the future?
Seed it.
Yeah, here's your answer.
No, it's okay. Okay.
It's a great answer.
Okay.
It was approved by Delphi.
We approved all this. This is all approved.
Delphi did not approve that, I guarantee you.
you started out with recruiting K to 6 parents.
Yes. And I kind of touched on that, with the high school, the young people who seem to be not really gifted in any particular area other than getting in trouble and having struggles with learning disabilities, attention deficit, and so forth, maybe even some interactions with law enforcement. And guess where the guidance counselor sent them when I was a kid? And as a young man in the industry and then in the Delco Electronics back 28 years ago. And I did a lot of talks to high schools then, and I'm hearing it from Matt now. The local school systems typically are still doing the same junk they've been doing for 30 or 40 years. And that is not the creme of the creme goes to the auto repair VOTEC training, but it's the worst of the worst. And some of you all slipped in there that aren't the worst, okay? And us up here. But we seem to be dissuaded. I mean, the gifted people scholastically from being involved in car repair. And that's just the opposite of what we're wanting. And I always tried to get the guidance counselors, this is 20 some years ago when I was doing these little community things for corporate America. They didn't realize the cars were so complex. That's in the early 90s. Now, going fast forward 25 years, that much more complexity, and the guidance counselors at the high schools are still the same way. We have to change the mindset from the parents up. And I have to give a big kudos to, Mike Rowe. From Dirty Jobs and his new
foundation
for America Works, whatever. He's trying to change it from the ground up. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a mentality swing that this trade is the one that really needs the critical thinkers and the people who are positive and actually have a love for learning.
But we're talking about going after critical thinkers, bright students that are bright enough to go on the internet, look at compensation packages, and then ask them to be stupid enough to forgo a career behind a desk or something easier, make as much or more, preserve their body, have time to go do what they like to do in their free time for vacation, and their bodies when they're able to retire, because they probably have a nice retirement plan, can go and physically do it. Their bodies aren't broken down. We're asking them to ignore that and jump into this industry?
Good point.
I'm sorry, trade? Because we don't really have any standards either.
Well, I think and believe that that is an issue and it's important. I think there's so much groundswell out there to work on who we're going to encourage to come in the business and how we're going to do it. And as I was just going to mention, Matt, I interviewed Jennifer Mahar twice now, once about a year ago and once just recently with about TechFours. You know, and I want to keep on the podcast the dialogue going about what it's going to take to become evangelicals and improve the image of our industry. You know, we need to have a soapbox. What's it going to look like? How are we going to get it? Where's the material that we can use? So it is not an easy solution, but I think the solution exists from everyone in this room and everyone involved in the industry.
It does. And I don't mean to be all doom and gloom. There's a lot of really, really great things about doing this for a living. You know, there's that instant gratification, unlike a lot of jobs, you know, that rush of correctly diagnosing a problem that three other shops, including the dealer, couldn't figure out and you got it. You can't top that. Let's build on that, you know, and let's support things that are out there, entities out there trying to support us, like ASE. They're out there for us to make use of to further our, you know, further our positive projection to the motoring public. And yet, what do? We, as a trade, devalue them. I don't get it.
Carm, I feel like our industry has an image problem. You know, when a child says, I want to be a dentist or a lawyer or a doctor, you know, they get some pats on the back, right? There's television shows that glamorize a lot of the other professional fields, but, you know, the work we do is every bit as difficult, if not more, in certain areas, and it's going to be more that way. So I don't have all the exact solutions, but whatever we, you know, do, I mean, at the very minimum, we need to be professionals and act like professionals. Any further certification programs and training programs to get us to that level where somewhere in the future we are viewed differently. Or I don't know, maybe we can have a television show that makes auto repair sexy. I don't know.
Glenn, here you go. Question for our panel.
Where do we fit in with the Amazon ocean to dip your toes in?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. And we need 2 hours to talk about that, right?
I would really briefly say we love Amazon as a supplier. Not necessarily for parts. I don't think they're there. And I think we're a few years out from them even being a qualified supplier. But that's a solution to us for, you know, shop supplies and, you know, the days of a guy running the store are over. You know, as far as I heard this argument with Amazon and price shopping, and I'm sorry, but it's just not an issue for us. It's, I mean, there have been people that have been price shopping for years. If that's the issue, then you've got a problem in the sales department. You need advisors that are trained, you know, on how to educate people properly. There have been people for years that have wanted to bring their own parts and do their own cars. You know, again, if it's an issue, we haven't seen it in ours. So
I found that a lot of price shoppers aren't really shopping for price. They're shopping for attitude. And whether they come to our shops or not, which is what the whole point of the phone is, to get them in the shop, depends on that attitude on the phone. You have a good attitude, you can turn them around and get them in, and then they'll be customers, and then they'll be friends for life.
If you're viewed as too expensive, the client simply doesn't see the value in paying you the amount of money you're asking for. And I think a lot of the answers lie in some Remarkable Results podcasts and some training. Namely, Mr. O'Neill in the back there has some great training out there about building value and conveying value to that client so that it takes price, which is really not at the top. Most of those surveys they do, price is not near the top, really. Take it kind of off the menu for a while and let them start thinking about value, value, bang for my buck. Yes, it's more, but I'm getting more for my dollar. I'm going to spend it over here rather than click send or okay on Amazon and schedule it with shop B.
One of the analogies that I use in training all the time is an egg. People who cook eggs at home, depending on where you live, you could buy a nice dozen eggs for $3. That's a quarter an egg. If you go to the restaurant and you buy, you know, an a la carte egg, you could spend a dollar, you know, four times as high, but you're paying for the service. Now, you know, people may cook at home more. They may work on their own cars, but people have this idea in their head of everyone's going to know my pricing. And it's just that issue's more up here. I said it's more of a sales issue.
There is a discussion about pricing transparency that Amazon is bringing. Next time we'll talk about that. Tony.
Yes. This is a question for, I want to go back for a minute to the, issue of attracting people into the industry. I agree to some degree, Matt, that we do still have an image problem. Okay. What did Pogo say? We have met the enemy and he is us. Okay. I've never encountered an industry that badmouths itself as much as I do in the automotive service industry. It's fascinating to me. But we have a lot of barriers to entry for young people coming into this market. I've done my fair share of career days, et cetera. And when you have the chance to talk to the parents and the career instructors more than anything else, or the counselors, about the wide variety of opportunity that's available in our market, it's like you taught them how to make fire. But one significant barrier to entry, and Carm, you've done a whole segment on this, is the cost of tools. Should we also be considering radically different business models to attract people into our industry, where the cost of tools is something that is borne by the shop, not by the applicant? It's bad enough they're paying, you know, significant sums for education these days. Pile on top of that 20 or 30K for a decent tool set, and you can see where the challenge is. That's a significant challenge that I think we could address through a change in business model. Do you think we're willing to do that as a market?
Isn't it? I think it's CarMax. It's one of the places that provides tools. And yeah, I think it's a great idea. The whole thing with the technicians, you know, being underpaid, and they have to do a job that's physically demanding, mentally demanding, and they got to take on $50,000 worth of debt. Yeah, it's crazy. So anything we can do to help. And again, if shops are profitable, I believe there's more than enough, you know, in the pot to provide tools. I have had some technicians traditionally say, well, if I don't own my tools and I can't leave, and, you know, so that problem would have to be addressed as well.
Anybody who wrenches or runs a shop in California, all right, you know the deal there.
Yeah.
If a tech comes in and has their own tools, then you pay them more. That's a state regulation. And so that's a good point that you bring up, Tony. And I am totally baffled by the mystery of how shop owners today bellyache about buying a couple of factory scan tools that are a fraction, I mean, a tiny shadow of the price of a big box analyzer, that whether you used it or not, you bought one for window dressing at the very least 30, 40 years ago. I mean, you do 2017 money of what a Sun MCA or whatever it was back in the day in the 70s, and you could buy five or six top of the line factory scan tools for most of your cars that are coming in the shop, and not have to worry about whether this brand or aftermarket, you know, tool did this or that. You've got the factory tool. So I'm not sure what the issue is, other than maybe they're paying a lot or more money for other things, but it just boggles my mind.
Tony made a mention that we had done a series. We actually, probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, we brought two service professionals and one mobile diagnosticians together on an academy. We do it live on Fridays. And the subject was buying technicians' tools. And all three of them were pro buying the tools.
Thank you. I'm Dana Meyer from California. I have a shop in Albany. In California, you're required to pay employees, if they buy their own tools, twice the minimum wage. But really, that's a joke, because minimum wage is only $10.50 right now. So a wage of $21 for an employee is ridiculously low. That's answering your question. I think the flat rate system is killing the older people that you were talking about. When you're expecting people who are working on many lines of cars to be able to produce the same way they did when they were 20 and 30 and 40, when they're 70 or more, it can't happen. You have to pay them for their brain. Because now they're faster.
We'd have to start charging diagnostic time.
You absolutely do, always. But flat rate manual, I think, is really a problem. I mean, flat rate pay is really a problem.
Survey, ATMC, Dave. I don't mind putting Mr. Milne on the spot. What were the answers that came out of there? I think when we did our podcast together, it was that there's still independent shops are 20% are doing flat rate. Am I right about that?
I think it's a little more than 20%, but it's certainly under 30%, whereas the OEs are, you know, 68%, I think, of their technicians work under flat rate. So in the aftermarket, about the largest group is now on salary, followed by hourly, then followed by salary, so, or flat rate. So we are starting to get it right. We are starting to move away from that, but in dealerships, if you're a dealership, you're going to be working under flat rate still, with no change in that in the foreseeable future.
ATMC ASE did a huge survey, and you were kind enough to come on the podcast and discuss it. And if you really want to get into some really deep details as what's going on, technicians responded. It was, I think, your biggest turnout in responses. A great, great survey, great episode.
Thanks, Carm. Matt, you said something earlier that struck me. I agree with you. The easiest thing, so it seems like, is to compete on price. What if we were to flip that and see that as the hardest thing? The hardest thing for me to compete as a quality provider of services in this auto industry is to compete dollar for dollar, because I'm always going to lose to the $15.95 guy, the oil change guy, because I'm providing what I believe to be what I owe the customer. I owe that customer to charge him enough money to employ the best people, to install the best parts, and to have the best warranty, so that garners the best reputation for us individually as a repair facility and us collectively as an industry. And so I commend you, gentlemen, particularly the millennials. We did a lot of damage to this industry as Gen Xers and baby boomers. And for that, I want to apologize for what we came from. But this is the technology world that's driving things right now. Within 5 to 10 years, dare I say, mark my words, we could have this industry turned around by the likes of you guys, guys that may be coming out of different places outside the automotive repair industry. Like Jeremy O'Neill says, you know, shop owners that come in within 2 years, you know, they turn a shop that out of nowhere, they turn it into a million and a half dollar shop. So this is where I think we're headed. We just have to have faith in that, and the people that are in this room are a testament to where we're going with that. So I want to thank you all for that.
Yeah. Well, I think with the technology coming in, we either rise to the challenge and meet it head on, or further technology will make up for the lack of our rising to the occasion and meeting it head on and just do it for us, or let any lackey do it.
Apex 2017, Ryan Clote, Dave Hobbs, Matt Fonslow, to all of you for being in here. It was great. Thanks.
Hey, many thanks to my panel who invested their time to give back to the industry. Ryan Clough from Dubworks in Cincinnati, Matt Fonslow, diagnostician and shop manager at Riverside Automotive in Red Wing, Minnesota, and Dave Hobbs, lead technical trainer and course developer for Delphi Product and Service Solutions. So well done, gentlemen. Thanks. Hey, remember, the top talking points are written for you at the show notes page at remarkableresults.biz/E278. I'm so glad we've been able to stretch the bounds of the podcast. This recording shows the capabilities of what's possible to bring you cutting-edge dialogue and stories from our beloved aftermarket. Hey, don't keep the podcast a secret. Be kind to a colleague. Send them the link so they can find their own educational value in the aftermarket's premier podcast.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.